Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here. We're bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Unpaved. It's Friday, December 12th already. Please like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. We got a lot to talk about today. Last night's nail-biting win for the Atlanta Falcons over the Tampa Bay Bucks, hurting the Bucks' chances at the playoffs. We got charges for Sharone Moore. We'll talk about those. We got a lot of college football topics to talk about. And then we got some big games in the NFL that have major playoff implications. We'll get into all that during the show. But, Sean, real quick before we get into Thursday Night Football, I just saw a tweet from Darren Drager, who covers hockey, obviously, and we have the Olympics starting here in just a couple months. The hockey arena in Milan looks like it's about 50% done. I saw a story not too long ago where the rink is going to be smaller. Yes, than the NHL rink, which normally the Olympic size rinks are bigger than the NHL rinks. This one's going to be smaller because they screwed up in building this arena. I mean, what a disaster that the Olympic committee just continues to be every single time we have an Olympics.
Let me just put this plain and simple. And Segs, normally, like, you know, the wider lanes in basketball and hockey, European, yeah. the hockey is bigger, you know, skate. I mean, just a little more room to skate. What we don't need at the Olympics is less room to skate, all right, where those bodies are beating each other. That being said, the Olympics are awesome for the competitors. And quite frankly, I'll be honest with you, the Olympic, how can I put it? Maybe it's because of COVID. Maybe it's because of Olympic committees. The Olympics no longer hold the pizzazz they held for me years ago. Oh, I'm not as interested as I was. Now, that's not to demean or diminish or shrink the player, the individuals and the teams and the countries that go over there and bust their ass. And year after year after year, these guys are competing, doing lonely work to swim in the Olympics, to ride a bike, you know, winter or summer Olympics, to ski in the Winter Olympics, to, you know, to win the 4x100 meter. There's still events that I love, but the shine's not as much as it used to be for me. The can't miss TV is no longer can't miss TV. I love watching the stories and the athletes, and God bless them, man. I don't ever want to take away, because all they, for them, it's the biggest thing they do right in their sport. It's their Super Bowl. It's their World Series. So I love it for the athlete. But the Olympic Committee, it's like everything else, Segs. Sometimes people get lumped in. They didn't do anything wrong, but you just kind of throw them all under the umbrella of one thing and say, even because you're guilt by association and the athletes right don't deserve this. I'm just telling you, Olympic committees, the lack of safety, when you hear athletes come out of there, and I know for some they make it sound like, well, these athletes are spoiled. But can you imagine going to a foreign country and not the beds are uncomfortable, you're trying to perform right at your highest level, and you're basically, you might as well sleep out on the concrete in certain situations or play in an arena that's dangerous. That's not what they're supposed to do. So for the athletes, God bless them, and all the time and effort, the people that coach them. But the Olympic Committee, and at times, it feels like it's happened more over the last handful of Olympics, that there always seems to be leading up to it either safety issues or venue issues. And it's, to me, it's taken off some of the, we get more negative going in. And so Olympic committees, we talk about bad governing bodies at times like the NC2A. Well, the IOC takes a backseat to nobody when it comes to governing bodies over Olympic committees and getting venues and the Olympics ready. I know how hard the locals do to get themselves ready. I get all that. So it's not that. But for me, I'll just plain and simply say it. The Olympics no longer hold the same weight viewing pleasure for me that they used to. It used to be sit in front of that TV and I'm not missing one swimming event. Sit in front of that TV, I'm not missing one track and field event. I got to be honest with you, man. If I see it, great. If I miss it, I'll watch a 90-second clip of the great Dan Hicks and Rowdy Gaines broadcasting a great swimming event where Katie Ledecky wins her 4,000th gold medal, deservedly so. But the Olympic Committee has made it hard, and the lack of safety and all the complaints going in have made it less. It's almost like there's less fervor going into it about the games themselves.
Yeah,
for sure. I can't even tell you. When do they start?
A couple months. I think January, I think. Normally, I think it's a January, February.
February, right. Yeah. That's what it is. Just when, like, right after the Super Bowl type of thing, I think, Sags, right? Or even before it. I don't know. I can't. That's my point. You used to know.
Yeah.
And so did I. We don't know.
Yeah. All right. Before we get to Thursday Night Football and the Falcons comeback win over the Tampa Bay Bucks, Sean, I want you to tell me about Augusta Precious Metals.
Well, do you care about confidence and security and peace of mind in retirement? And you can be 30 or 70 or 90. I don't really care how old you are. Preparing for something when one's more valued, the dollar at its value and gold at its value, I don't know. Seems like logic to me. And, you know, when you watch these games and play in sports every week, it reminds me in football, the clock's always moving. And it's moving in retirement, too. The problem is when you throw an interception, it's a good thing for a quarterback. You come back and get them the next series. Well, when you throw too many interceptions and you're 75 in your retirement or 50 and you've decided you're slowing your career down because you want to enjoy the fruits of your labor and then something bad hits because you weren't prepared for it, imagine what that does. You made the clock will tick right down on you. You don't want to be 75 and coming out of retirement unless you want to start another business. Well, let's talk about Augusta Precious Metals. Time doesn't stop, man. It keeps rolling on with or without you. So you got to stay calm and you got to make the right move and let Augusta help. You know, we are at about $38 trillion in debt in our country. And by the end of 2026, I would imagine it'll push close to $40 trillion. A lot of money being spent, and I understand why in certain cases, but others, it's a lot of debt. And that kind of pressure hits SEGS, it hits me, it hits you, hits anybody. I'm not telling you to do something you're not comfortable with, but I would look into Augusta Precious Metals and educate yourself on why the value is important. Gold's only going this way in 2026. It's not going any other place. It's been on the rise for a while. That's why I've been talking to, and they're a big partner for our show, Augusta Precious Metals. They're the ones helping people. And I'm just leading you to water, man. Now you got to drink it. And it's a pretty simple drink. They're helping people understand to keep part of their savings in something real. Precious metals, tangible assets like gold. So you're not tied up into Washington controlling every move you make. Can you imagine that? And if everything you did, government stood over the top. And I know at times they try, but let's get out of that mode so you can protect yourself without having to rely on somebody else other than Augusta Precious Metals. Hey, they put together a short, simple read free guide called the $40 trillion threat report. The $40 trillion threat report, it just helps and lets you know and informs you and educates you on what's going on and what options you got. There's no sin or no problem or no price on going to find out what those options are. Gold is on the rise. And it continues to rise. You need to check it out. If you want to see, there's a link in my description. You can text Sean, S-E-A-N, to 35052. That's 35052. Text Sean to 35052, and they'll send it right over. Take a look when you have a minute. It's not going to take long. It's a simple read, and it may very well give you the confidence and security and peace of mind you need heading towards retirement, in retirement, or deep into retirement. Make a smart move. Educate yourself. It's worth understanding what kind of game we're playing and the game we're in right now. It's Augusta Precious Metals. Text Sean to 35052 and get that $40 trillion threat report. Just go over it and you'll get an idea why you need Augusta Precious Metals. Thanks.
All right. As always, thank you to Augusta Precious Metals for being part of the Unpaved family. Sean, last night, Thursday Night Football, we thought the Bucks would come out here and beat up on the Falcons. And for the most part, they did. They were up 28-14 after an early touchdown in the fourth quarter. And then all of a sudden, here comes the Falcons. They score a touchdown, go for two, score a touchdown, go for two. So now they're down 28-26, which, again, the whole two-point thing with the analytics and everything, it just feels like sometimes in these games it's just being overthought, but that's
– And chasing it, chasing gambling money to get you in trouble, Sex. Yeah. Just like chasing points does.
Yeah, I just don't get it. But then the Falcons get the ball back, go down, score – or kick a last-second field goal to get the 29-28 win over the Bucs. But I thought the biggest thing coming out of this was Bucs head coach Todd Bowles. He was pissed after the game, and we have the video. So, Bailey, Triple E, go ahead and roll that. And just listen to how mad Todd Bowles is, and then Sean, come out and react to it.
It's inexcusable. You don't make excuses. You got to fucking care enough where the shit hurts. You got to fucking care enough where the shit hurts. It got to fucking mean something to you. It's more than a job. It's your fucking livelihood. How well do you know your job? How well can you do your job? Well, you can't sugarcoat that shit. It was in the fucking excusable, and there's no fucking answer for it. There's no excuse for it. That's what you tell them in the locker room. Look in the fucking mirror.
Now, I will tell you, that's about as emotional as Todd Bowles gets it. He didn't even raise his voice. Had he not said a cuss word, you'd have said, is he really into it? Because he was slinging F-bombs every other word. Right. Reminds me of my great coach, Jerry Burns. Burnsy, his fill word was dropping the F-bomb, right? But that's his – Todd played Meyer. That's his, about as emotional as he'll get. But you could tell the anger because of the F-bombs and the time of the game. This is – I've seen a lot of comments on Bowles and that he, you know, was a, I confess somebody else did it. I'm going to hit that in a second. Last night, Segs – we finally, and we see it inconsistent, but Kyle Pitts looked like the guy I thought he was going to be coming out of the draft. I thought he was a can't-miss superstar. They had 19 penalties, I believe, Atlanta did, and still won. This will tell you something about Tampa Bay. It's not now I can see those F-bombs talking to your team if you had 19 penalties. I wonder what the other team, we had 19 penalties, he'd still found a way to win. We had a third long and like a fourth and 26 or a third and 26 late, and they still won. And they still had a walk-off field goal and won. Remember I said going into yesterday, Segs, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are doing 180 degrees what they did. Not 360, folks, because 360 take you back to where you started. 180 degrees different the way they were winning early. And at that time, we said it can get you in trouble if you don't consistently play good late. Well, Baker was up and down in the game, and he's been in the first half of the season, first third plus MVP. But they were winning those games. Now they're finding ways to lose them. And we said yesterday before we picked this in our bet that this team, can they prove after what happened against the Saints that they go back to with that fire in the belly, finding a way to get it done as opposed to give it away? And they haven't. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are in big-time danger of missing these playoffs after that start. What a El Foldo that is. But the Todd Bowles situation. I'm going to give you his side of it. There comes a point in time, especially we don't see what's going on in the practice field, that – when this happens, all this is, Segs, is an accumulation and of what's been going on for them for weeks. This isn't just because last night.
Right.
This was an exclamation point for last night. It's funny how some coaches will applaud for F-bombs and going off, and some were going to, oh, yeah, nice accountability. Todd Bowles, I have zero issue as a player. I'm dead serious of him MFing us. And getting after it as a player and doing that standing up there at the pulpit, that's okay. Where he missed, all he had to do was slide in my coaching staff and me as well. No problem. But the whole rant was simply, I confess these players, and it's not a lot of them, it's a couple of them. And Segs, it usually is. Mm-hmm. I've said this a million times. It usually is one or two players and 8 to 10 plays in a game that screw the whole thing up.
Right.
You can have four offensive linemen blocking. If one misses his assignment, the play is dead. You can have 10 guys run into the football and one not, and that gap he's supposed to fill or where he's supposed to be, bam, they're late, boom. So, yeah, it is inexcusable. And these players have looked like horse shit with the way they've played and their inability to close lately. But what happens is, in my mind, great leaders, and I got a lot of respect for Todd Bowles, greatly. Sometimes I watch him on the sidelines and wonder what he's thinking when there's no emotion. You stand.
Right.
I do. I have a million times. Look at him and said, I wonder what he's thinking right now. At least I knew last night, even though he didn't raise his voice, but the F-bombs hit. Here's what I know about great leaders. just like great quarterbacks. When you win, it's all about the players and the assistant coaches. When you lose, it's all about what we got to do, not just them.
Yeah.
I would have better, Todd, I think would have been better served, just me, and it's hard when they throw a mic in your face, but you got to be judicious, is to let that speech happen in the locker room after the game. Tell those guys at the end of the game, that exact speech, MF him up and down 75 times if you want. Out in front, we sucked. We got to coach better. I got to coach better. Our players got to play better. It's inexcusable for the way we went about it as coaches and players. We had a 2-touchdown lead. To let this get away tells me that we've got a lot of holes on our football team, and it's my job to go fix it. And I'm about to walk in this locker room and make sure they know exactly what the problem is. And then get off the stage, off the dais, off the pulpit, whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. So I have no problem with the way he did it. The venue was probably wrong. He could have done it in different ways. I'm not Todd Bowles. That's how I'd have done it. Because even in the worst of times, that's when I'm looking for the best of leaders and I'm the best of survival. The easiest thing to do is to shit talk everybody like he did and then walk off there. Now, he's probably going to come back and wake up today, and they did, thinking, I'm still pissed, but you know what? Maybe I could have handled this a little different. If not, fine. He'll deal with it, whatever the backlash is or whatever the thumbs up is. I just think in the worst of times, you're asking your players to play their best and they didn't. In the worst of times of a press conference, I would suggest that you play your best when you have the mic in front of your face. And unfortunately, last night, Todd didn't. But I have zero issue with what he said.
Right.
I really, his cuss words don't offend me. If they offend you, turn it off. Mute it, mute the sound. But I just think when you're in a day, when in a time when we have such athletes are, well, they're pussified, a lot of them, and they are sensitive and they take everything personal, that when you address them like that in public, their initial reaction is to react in a, well, how dare him? We had a crappy ass practice week or a horrible plan. The good ones understand what Bowles said, that the tough-minded ones. But Todd Bowles also, to prove that he's tough-minded, and he is, he played a lot of football and has coached a lot of football, that sometimes at the word, that's when you want to find out, honestly, okay, I got to take the high road, which is hard to do because I know I wear my emotion on my sleeve. That'd be hard to bypass. I get it. But I'm also tired of people saying, babysit, coddle, and tell these players exactly what they want to hear. And when you get your ass kicked like that, screw them.
Right.
They got a job to do, and it is their livelihood. And guess what? You can lose it. You make a lot of money in your livelihood. Their performance, if you showed up at your construction site, would have looked like a guy who didn't know a carpentry from his ass. That's the way it worked last night. I get it with Bowles, but unfortunately, we're at a time when the pussification of athletes and the sensitivity of athletes, they take everything. Well, is he talking to me? Maybe. Go look at the tape. You'll know who he's talking to. He probably just chose the wrong mic to speak it into. Better served to dress them down behind those closed doors and make sure they know. And then you can raise your voice a little bit, which I think at times some of us would actually like to see from Todd Bowles.
Yeah. We're coming down the stretch here for the playoffs, and especially in this NFC South. You now have the Bucs at 7-7. They're 1-5 in their last six games. You have the Carolina Panthers, who face New Orleans this week in New Orleans with a chance to take a good lead in this division. But after this week, Carolina and Tampa Bay play each other in Carolina. Then Tampa Bay plays the Miami Dolphins. And then they wrap up the season in Carolina, or no, at Tampa Bay against the Carolina Panthers. So the Panthers and the Bucks still have to play each other twice. The Carolina Panthers have Seattle in between those games, traveling cross country to Carolina to face the Panthers. So this is going to be an interesting follow. While it's probably the worst division, no, it is the worst division in football, it's going to be an interesting last 3 weeks of the season as we wind down and figure out who will get that fourth spot in the NFC, that fourth seed in the NFC, and get a home game because you're a division winner, even though your division is really, really shitty. So that'll be something to watch as we come down the stretch.
And Mike Fittery, 77, real quick, Segs. Television networks that, you know, want to run a coach out because of what he said. When did we become – like I said, I've admitted that you probably better serve to do it behind closed doors. I'm not a dirty laundry error when it comes to this. I don't like to do that. I don't care if you MF me a million times. When you do it out there, our defense mechanisms automatically kick in as players. But we've also softened it. The real good players on that team and the tough-minded ones, Segs, I mentioned, but you know what they're going to do? They're going to go watch the tape, and they're going to address the players and say, you know what? You may not like where Coach said it, but he's 100% correct.
Right.
Now, I don't know how the coaches put the game plan in. I'm assuming fine, but Todd Bowles, you better drop that F-bomb in a staff meeting today as well. They better hear it too, because you're only as good as the preparation of the game plan you put in and how it's executed. No doubt about it. No doubt.
Bijan Robinson was on the post-game show after talking about the win, and he talked about a backyard game we all played growing up. I mean, it was something that was played all over the place. I played it. I'm sure you guys played it, Sean, when you were younger. And it's a derogatory term, but it's just he's talking about the game, and he was talking about getting after the ball carriers like the defense was flying around doing. But, it's called smear the queer. That's what he said. And let's show the video real quick so everybody can see it. This is Bijan Robinson last night. So, I mean, he came out and he apologized for it. Just talking about, he was just saying the game. That's the game we played growing up. Everybody did. You can say you didn't. You can say you were woke back in the early 2000s, the 90s, everything. No, that's what the game was called. That's what it's always been called. And so I don't, I think, yeah, come out, apologize, say, hey, I didn't mean anything by it. I was just referencing the game. But do you have any problem here with Bijan Robinson? I think he was just in the moment, said it because it's the game he played growing up. And now he comes out and says this. And I think it's just, okay, done.
That's yes. Right. Listen, I would imagine some even gay people should first off, he apologized. There'll be some that say he doesn't need to apologize. He was referencing a game that he played growing up like we all did. And that's exactly what we called it.
Yep.
It's just like Sigs. When I was in high school, you people would say, oh man, or even in college, like, oh man, that's so gay, but you weren't referring to a gay person. It was like gay. It just kind of was the all encompassing that could have meant, oh, that's so gay. That's so bad. Or no, we're not going there. Or that drink's weak. Or you get referred to a lot of things. The times have changed. We are more sensitive. There is more of this. People are looking for reasons to bury people. The guy apologized. He's sitting on a set with 10 people, was referencing a game and stuff that we've all done. We evolve. The things you said in the 90s, can't say in 2000, 2010. But the fact that we're going to make a big deal of this, and he apologized, move on. I don't know if people are or aren't. He said it. I'm sure that people in the truck were like, oh my gosh, what happened? Even though it's Thursday night, so it's cable, you're allowed to say stuff. I don't think Bijan Robinson meant that by saying, I hate gay people, or right, using the queer word to explain it. Bijan Robinson, I don't even think that entered his mind. I just think it was that was smear the guy who, well, was the one that on that particular time deserved to get worn out. And he could be the most physical macho dude on the planet. So right. It was a name we called it, but it didn't really refer to that in our mind. At least it didn't. Right. But that was back then. Even if it did, nobody cared back then. We just laughed and moved on. People are more sensitive. I understand the sensitivity. Listen, I get it. But the guy immediately apologized. I don't think there was a vicious bone in his body when he said that. And, there's people on the set that laughed. We are way overly sensitive. He apologized and moved on. He shouldn't have to go do community service to show the world that he's not, that he's intolerant of the Q word or gay people. I don't think anybody said it. All of us said gay people use the phrase, straight people use the phrase right. Way back when. It was a game. And he referred to it, apologized. I think you get lost in the moment and people say stuff that, and it was an old reference game that we all played and loved to play. But it wasn't, I would not say that, for him in that moment, try and keep track of everything. It came out, it was apologetic. I'm sure that people were offended, but you and I aren't, but I'm not gay. So I can't speak for somebody who is. I just know this. Once he apologized and it felt It looked heartfelt and sounded heartfelt to me. I don't see why we'd even make a bigger deal of it than that. He owes no second apology. It was a mistake. And it really was simply, and it's a great point, Mike, that was just the target. You'll hear people refer to Segs when it comes to betting, old school betting. We'll still refer to, like, when a weird line comes out, they'll call it a queer line. Mm-hmm. I've heard it said on air.
Yep.
Not, and it's not a derogatory comment towards gay people. It's just that it was a strange line, a different line. Whatever, however you describe that word towards gambling is what I'm saying. And I've even, when I said it, said, oh, that's an odd way to phrase it, even though I know what the phrasing meant right. towards gambling. So, right. I listen, people can jump all over to all they meant. In my mind, let it go. He apologized. It wasn't a big deal when he said it. If it was to some, he immediately apologized. We got to have a little latitude for people that were just reference points to come back and say, you know what, man, I'm really sorry. And he did. I don't think anybody should have any hatred or anger towards Bijan Robinson. People say stuff all the time, and some don't apologize. He did. It's not that big a deal to me. Let it go. It seems like the guy's got a great heart, is a good dude, and by all accounts, there's no intolerance here. We're dumb if we have intolerance yeah. towards him over this. Simple.
So we've got the latest from TJ Watt. He underwent surgery on Thursday to repair a partially collapsed lung suffered Wednesday during treatment at the Steelers facility. TJ Watt is expected to be discharged from the hospital at some point today, but he is unlikely to play Monday night versus the Dolphins. And this is from his brother, JJ Watt. So he got it taken care of. There was a hole in his lung somewhere, which obviously caused pain. Labored his breathing. They took care of that and unlikely to play. He just needs rest now. So hopefully he'll be ready for the Steelers next game after Monday night.
It boggles my mind. Think about what we're saying here. Now, this is the epitome of toughness. I want you to think of, we just are blowing over this, not you and I say, yeah. like, oh, yeah, he's not going to play Monday night. Well, no shit. The guy has a hole in his lung.
On his lung.
I mean, think about it. We're sitting here, and hopefully he'll be ready to play. A hole in their lung would keep people that go to a job where you're sitting in a chair for 8 hours a day, an accountant, home. And we're sitting here saying, man, well, I wonder if he's going to play Monday. Well, he's not playing Monday, but let's get him ready for the stretch run and get him ready for the playoffs and hopefully the next year. The dude has a hole in his lung.
Yeah.
So if you ever question some guy's toughness, that's one you don't have to question. I mean, think how nonchalant we are. Oh, man, what's my fan? I mean, my fantasy defense, if they have the Pittsburgh Steelers, man, TJ's one of my guys. I love him.
I mean, it's,
you got a hole in his lung.
Yeah, it's just a collapsed lung. I mean, get out there and play, TJ. Let's go.
Yeah, don't be a wussy, right? I mean, good gracious. So, yeah, good. I'm glad he's okay. I don't know anything about what goes forward with this, Segs, what you do to plug the hole, how quickly the recovery is with the hole, what the damage is down the road. I have zero idea. I do know this. It sounds a lot more painful than we're just kind of casually people like, oh, they'll be back in 10 days, be ready to go, whatever it is. So let's hope it doesn't have any lasting effects, Segs, and that this is a one-off and that the repair means it's repaired. You know, I don't know. When you change a spare tire, when you change a tire with a spare and then put on the real one, is that the case with the hole in your lung? I'll leave that to the medical stuff to the doctors. But if you want to question toughness, how many guys are going to work? Hey, I'm going to be late to work today. What's wrong? A lot of traffic. No, I got a hole in my lung. Oh, okay. I'll expect you tomorrow. This is friggin' football where the guy's down and dirty playing a violent sport. So more importantly, glad that TJ's healthy, and thanks for the report from JJ. And hopefully he gets back on the field, but that there are no further issues with that hole in his lung.
Yeah, this is it's something we don't see a lot. We did see it, remember, with not Tyrod Taylor. When he was with the Chargers, remember that? He was supposedly getting a pain shot, and the doctor screwed up and hit his lung, and his lung collapsed, had to be taken to the hospital, get it reinflated. I mean, it's just,
And that's how Herbert became the starting quarterback. He was not supposed to start that year.
It was
crazy stuff.
Scary situation. We have the latest.
Here I thought a compound fracture that I had where the bone popped out of the skin was the end of the world, right? Nah. So kudos to those guys. You never the toughness, man. The threshold of pain for some is incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy. We do have the latest in the Sharon Moore situation. He has been charged with three different charges: home invasion in the third degree, which is a felony. It's a third degree felony, punishable up to 5 years in prison and a $2,000 fine. Also charged with stalking, which is a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 1 year in jail and a $1,000 fine. And then breaking and entering, which is a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 90 days in jail and a $500 fine. He's still being held due to emotional distress, and basically he's being watched because of some of the stuff he said. He's basically under a psych hold. That's the best way to put it. 72-hour psych hold.
Got to protect him from himself, Segs, because this rock bottom stuff,
It's a crazy situation, but Michigan is moving on with the coaching search, and a lot of names are popping up, Sean. A lot of names.
Yeah, and there will be continue. From my vantage point, Segs, you brought this question up yesterday, just to say it again. I would think that the university and what's going on probably need to, what's the word I'm looking for? Let this play out a little bit and understand the how heightened this is before you jump in and hire another coach to come into that building. The guys the when I say the big ones, the most sought after are already coaching.
Yeah.
We're almost at the point for the most part where assistants may go from a quarterback coach or a wide receiver coach to a coordinator somewhere else, or go with the coach that left. But right now, unless you're going into the guys that aren't the Urban Meyers or Nick Sabans of the world, the hot commodities are already taken. So if you're Michigan, just for optics and look alone, you got to let this breathe, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. Secondly, rock bottom's a bitch now.
Yep.
Even when it's self-inflicted. I know we all, what I'm saying, your rock bottom may not be what Sharon Moore's is, but we all know when we hit our rock bottom and hope you never go back, what that did to us, or what it's done to somebody close to us. I hit mine, and it all came at once, Six. You lose your dad, you lose your home, you lose your job, you lose your paycheck, all of it. For different reasons, but it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, the reason it matters in that life, and it matters to the women, and it matters to the university, and it matters to him. But whatever in your life, you're going through rock bottom. And so there's that little bit of compassion, even with those self-inflicted, because you know he's battling some major demons, Segs. He's on suicide watch to have what happened, getting fired, and then all this start to come to fruition. He was obviously, before he got fired, Segs, there were issues before this happened leading up to him. It just didn't just get fired and all this came to – he was carrying around this burden for a while. I'm not a psychologist, but I can tell you, when you're going through rock bottom, it's only a matter of time when you bottom out.
Yeah,
and he was tempting it for way too long. From my vantage, I don't know him. I've never been around him personally. But when you go from, cheating on your wife to and your kids are watching, and you think you're beating the system, to on a national championship team, then suspension, and then possible the allegedly pregnancy and abortion. Don't know if that's true. That's what the legend. All the talk, even if none of it's true, the talk still affects that guy in rock bottom. Yes. And because people want to pile on. So while I'm not telling you to feel sorry for Sharon Moore, he made a lot of money and he self-inflicted, blew it. But look, the rock bottom, now you look at the collateral damage of his family, his wife, the girl, the people in the home that he stalked, his career, his head coaching career is going to take a long time. This absolutely has nothing to do with race, folks. It was a self-inflicted mistake, because I saw the race card being played out there too. Sharon Moore felt like he was a good football coach, or Jim Harbaugh wouldn't have hired him. But it's not about football or his next job. Right now, it's about getting him right so he doesn't go through this. So self-inflicted problems. I mean, I know people don't feel sorry for him. It's not a matter of feeling sorry for him. It's okay to have a little compassion for everybody involved, because there was no winner in this. Maybe Michigan in the end, because you're going to get a coach who's walking in with a clean conscience, you hope. Yep. But if you've been through your rock bottom, he's going through it. So piling on, that'll be up to you. But the gal, I try to leave the names out. I know who it is, but his mistress and the dad who is involved in football and scouting, the University of Michigan, him, his wife, his kids. Think about this. Isn't just his rock bottom. Now think about all the damage it's done to everybody else. Got to answer questions. So I hope he gets right, and I hope it gets cleared up, and I hope whatever time that it is that he serves his rock bottom, that this will be his come to Jesus, that he needs to get his life straightened out. And I can say it because I know what it looks like, not the way he went about it, but in my own world. And I'm sure, Segs, you've had your moments, obviously. I know how worried I was about you during the cold when you got sick.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be anything that was rock bottom that you caused anybody else any trouble. It could be just you got sick and had to go through. Right. You're wondering if you're going to make it.
Right.
So all the things, and I'm not speaking for you, but I know you and I had close conversations about that, Segs. So mm-hmm. we all go through it. So for me, I'm trying to be compassionate, understanding that to kick him in his balls while he's in his situation, probably there's going to be enough doing it. It doesn't mean you got to feel sorry for him, but you also got to realize that the collateral damage to his kids and the rest of it is something that he will never forget. Let's just hope he gets his life right. And I'm very serious about that. And it's a bummer, but it comes in bunches, Segs. And for him, it's coming about 10 different things in a different way, but in the same feeling. Rock bottom sucks, even when it's self-inflicted.
Yeah, those walls start closing in, and they close in fast. And, you know, some people don't know how to react to it.
And Segs, when they close in, what you got to do, they eventually close in. Then you got to start to rebuild the foundation.
Yes.
And it's not the foundation for the optics. It's a foundation so you can actually survive it. So if something comes your way again, you know how to handle it better. Sports, celebrity, temptation is a bad thing, man. And like I said, but there's a lot of damage done. And there's been some controversy surrounding Michigan, you know, Segs, with the sideline stuff. Michigan's been going through it for a minute now. And now Sherrone Moore's going through it, not only for the University of Michigan, but his own life and his family's life. And in truth, if you do feel sorry for anybody, feel sorry for the collateral damage he's caused his own family, which is a bummer.
100%. And all that controversy surrounding not just football, basketball with Juwan Howard and the way all that was handled, hockey with their previous coach and the way that was all handled. They've had controversy at that university. And that's why I'm amazed sitting here today. Like, I thought we were going to come on the show today and be able to say athletic director Ward Manuel has also been fired because it's all under his watch. And the fact that he still has a job and is going to be part of this coaching search is insane to me. Now, there are some still saying that hammer is coming here in the next little bit of Ward Manuel being out. But Michigan needs to now not turn the page on that and, like, stay with that, but they have to look ahead to their football team, to their football coach. They're trying to keep Bryce Underwood, who is paying close attention to what's going to happen with the next coach. So let me just throw a name at you, and you give me 10 seconds on good fit, not a good fit. You don't think he'll leave, that type of thing. And these are names.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about Bryce. I do want to talk about Underwood when we come out of this.
We'll hit Underwood after that. These are college coaches, some involved in the NFL, some not coaching at the moment. So let me just throw, I got 9 names. We'll fly through these. Kalen DeBoer at Alabama
would be an upgrade. He's a good football coach. I think with 3 losses, I still don't think Alabama's secure. I think that's a name that's going to hover there until Alabama and him decide we're staying.
And he does have the Midwest ties, coached at Eastern Michigan,
was interested in that job originally.
Yes. Yeah. And wanted the job when Sherrone Moore got it. It was the timing thing where Alabama offered Michigan. Jim Harbaugh had not left yet to go to the Chargers. So he took the Alabama job, not knowing if Michigan would open. So that's one. I think maybe my favorite option here, Sean, Kenny Dillingham at Arizona State.
I think it'd be a brilliant hire. Maybe, just maybe, Segs, the reason Leavitt and the other guys are leaving, and Kenny has been so complimentary to them, you know, and he's taken the high road about guys transferring from his program. And he's young. He's won. He's got to a playoff.
Yep.
And it seems like he comes with a clean slate, which, Segs, they're going to be vetted in this. The next head coach is going to be vetted because of what happened with this situation and what's been going on at Michigan. So you're going to have to come pure as the driven snow. Maybe that his eyes have been on this, even though Arizona State's his alma mater. I think it'd be a great hire. And if you're the quarterback, stick around. This guy knows how to maximize your quarterback position. Big, big consideration as college football coaches go. I love him.
Yeah, the youth, the building that program up into a college football playoff team, even though it was for one season, he's got big time quarterbacks to come there and lifted them up, and they've moved on to bigger and better things. And that's part of being at a program like Arizona State, where you may not get to keep them, but you got to keep building. And he does that. Now, if you go to Michigan and you get a Sam Leavitt, a Jaden Daniels, a Bryce Underwood, they stay and you build them to pros. And that's, they leave from Michigan to the pros.
He's got a better chance to win a national title at Michigan than he does at Arizona State.
100%. That, and that's what I think it would take for Kenny Dillingham to leave his alma mater, is one of the major marquee programs in college football that comes calling and gives you everything you want. Let's go Lincoln Riley, USC. He's just being mentioned, so that's why I'm throwing him in there. I know I've kind of joked about it, but everywhere I look, every little board you see, guys talking, Lincoln Riley's name always gets brought up at least. So it's an interesting name that maybe something is happening behind the scenes.
A lot of respect for Michigan. You know that, Segs. Hold him in high regard. He'd be an absolute nut job to leave SC for to go to Michigan. He doesn't have to go. He's got a clean, clear situation. That's the number one recruiting class. Why? Then you love chaos.
Right.
Then you like to run into problems. I know that there's some guys that are fixers. That's too much baggage from Michigan for Lincoln, not the other way around.
Yeah.
He'd be nuts. While all the talk's there, there's not enough money to get him, in my opinion, unless he gets fired from SC, he'd be nuts to leave that job and go to Michigan. He's got just as good a chance that Michigan does right now to win at SC. Maybe better, because it's a clearer slate. No way would I leave.
Yeah, it would be shocking hire if that did happen. All right, let's go to two guys that have just gotten extensions. Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. Doesn't leave for Penn State, but Michigan, I mean, that's a different – I mean, to me, it's a different tier. It's Penn State's one tier down, Michigan's up. I mean, this is a big-time job that you leave Vanderbilt for. He's the type of coach that defensive-minded, kind of fits that Big Ten style of, you know, defense, run the ball. But he's also found Diego Pavia and built him into a Heisman finalist, which we'll talk about at some point today, of the finalist being named. So what do you think about Clark Lee?
I think that he would be a great hire. I love his commitment to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt would have to understand if he took the Michigan job. For him, to me, I mean, if he stays at Vanderbilt and they offer him the job and he turns it down, that'll speak volumes on both the character of Coach Lee and the Michigan situation and what it's in. Better chance to win it at Michigan than Vanderbilt? Yes. I would love to have him hired there, because I like guys to go take programs that really are in dire straits or trying to build and make them a winner. He'd be a great hire. There's a big part of me that feels like he's committed to Vanderbilt. It would have to be he would have to sift through all the crap that Vanderbilt doesn't give him that Michigan would right now.
Yeah. And then the other one who has signed an extension, Eli Drinkwitz at Mizzou.
At some point in time, Segs, you would think that he's going to take the next step, right? Somewhere else.
Right.
Because my question is, was he truly offered the other gigs, or were they just flirting with him? Like, was he offered Penn State? I mean, we hear it, but I'm talking about where they said, here's what you're going to get, and here's how much money we'll offer you, and here's the years, and here's the NIL, all that. I don't know how, with respect to Missouri, and even with the chaos, that if you offer Eli Drinkwitz this gig, and it can go the same for Vanderbilt, and say, here's this 8 years, 80 million, whatever it is, 9 million a year, whatever it is, how you can turn it down. And because if you turn this down, I almost feel like you're committing that Missouri's your place to stay as long as they'll have you. And those guys do exist. They're not rampant, but they do exist.
Yeah.
If I'm him, I take the gig, because again, he's not going to win a national championship at Missouri. I love him. But then again, it comes with this, Segs. 9 wins at Missouri, contract extension. 9 wins at Michigan, you get fired 3 years later.
Right.
Tougher sledding, even though one's the SEC, I get it. But through the SEC or Big Ten, he's just going to have better access to players. That's it. If it was offered to him, I'd take it, because I think he can make a difference for Michigan and obviously pick up where Jim Harbaugh left this program when he left it.
Okay, speaking of Jim Harbaugh, let's kind of go to the Harbaugh group of coaches that could be looked at, or and maybe should they be looked at. Let's start right next, his best friend on this planet, his brother John Harbaugh, coach of the Ravens. We've talked all season about how maybe things are going stale there in Baltimore and in Pittsburgh. Would you call John Harbaugh and say, hey, I know things may a little rocky season there. Would you be interested coming, taking over your brother's, you know, tail end of this recruiting class that was his last one, and now you kind of take off from here and you can ride this into the sunset? You've got your Super Bowl. Now come win a national championship and move on.
Oh, dude, can I see Michigan doing it? Hell yeah. Why would you pick up a phone by not only with the Harbaugh name, but a well-respected coach and guy who's a really mm-hmm. who could walk into a situation and deal with all the shit, because there is some shit going on there. But first off, I go to Steve Bisciotti and I say, I need to know what the safety of my job is, if he's going to be on. Bisciotti's a really good owner because he doesn't meddle. He stays out of it, lets those guys do it, which I love with owners. I don't want you to face the organization. I want it to be Harbaugh or Lamar Jackson. So with that, if they're saying, John, we're going to extend you. We love you again. You, whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I would not leave. That it's harder now to coach in college than it is the NFL because of all the shit you got to deal with. And there's more time spent, honestly, coaching in college because all the seasons just don't end. If you take too much time off, you get left behind. And then you got to deal with what you're already dealing with, paying players. No, if you're John, you do not go leave that gig for the other gig. If they're getting ready to say, well, John, we're not going to make a long-term commitment. Of course. But Michigan, yes. If you're John Harbaugh, you stay right where you're at as long as your job's safe.
And remember, currently Michigan's defensive coordinator that will play Texas in the bowl game is Wink Martindale, who was John Harbaugh's longtime defensive coordinator there in Baltimore. Jesse Minter, the Chargers defensive coordinator. He was with Jim Harbaugh at Michigan when they won the national title. They leave, go to the Chargers together. He's become a hot name in NFL circles. And could he want to go back and coach Michigan? And I think this is just a, simply put, does he want to be an NFL head coach or a college head coach? If it's NFL, then I don't think you really talk about this, because you don't want a guy to come in, give you 3 years of really good coaching, and then say, okay, I'm going to the NFL now. I think you're looking for someone Michigan that can be there a long time.
Yeah, it is Michigan, though, and this temptation of when you go there, if you have success on a top 10 type program, once you get there, if I'm Michigan, I'm saying, once we get here and lure him in to be the coach here and we have success, he won't want to leave. I'm not approaching, if I'm Michigan, I'm not approaching, well, what if he leaves in 4 years? Well, maybe he will, but for the time being, of the assistant coaches that I'm thinking about, Mentor's at the top of the list. It's recent. He's been there. The ring they have on their finger, Mentor was a big part of it. He'd come highly regarded from Jim or anybody else that suggested him. You know, that Jim and John Harbaugh, that whole thing's kind of incestual. Wink goes here, somebody goes there, this guy goes here, Mentor's here, McDonald. I mean, but they know how to win. And you're an assistant right now. It's like a quarterback. Don't pass up the open short guy for a first down to think I can get a touchdown when I don't even know if the guy's open. You take that gig. You never know when it will rear its head again. If Michigan offers Mike Minter the job, he should take it, and Michigan will reap the rewards for a Mike Minter hire. He's young enough to understand the recruiting thing and the energy that goes with it. He's had great success. There's respect. He's respected at both the NFL and college. He'll walk back in there and everybody's going to look at the shiny ring and say, he's our closest tie to that ring. Mentor as assistants go would be a great mentor. And I think he'd put a great staff together. His offensive coordinator would be a must, a great hire. Yeah. If you're going to do that, when I say Mike, that's his dad, Jesse Mentor. Jesse. I always think about it. You know what I meant, because the Mentor family, because he coached at the University of Cincinnati and good DNA. Yes. Jesse Minter would be a great hire for them. If you're going in the assistant coaching style, give me him. Although I know some people like get the offensive guy, leave that to Jesse Minter. I think that he'd be great for Michigan.
And one thing to consider, he does have a show cause, but I believe I read that show cause is up in 3 days. So
yeah, I was going to say, isn't that time up, Segs? I thought I saw the same thing too, but before the new year.
I saw December 15th. I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure it's up here in the coming days. And then one last one. This one's out of football. Hasn't been in football in a little while. John Gruden, currently works at Barstool Sports, is still involved in football in every way. He travels the country going and watching football programs. Back in the day, they did a write-up on him, and his dream job was the University of Michigan. That's what he said a long time ago. Now he's coached. He's won Super Bowls. Hasn't coached in college in a long time. It'd be a different style of coaching when you had your coaching kids and the NIL and all that stuff. Do you think it'd be worth it to even just talk to John and say, you interested? What would you do? What would it look like here at Michigan if you were in charge?
Of course. Why wouldn't I talk to him? That when people say, well, should you give him an interview? Any job, people that are hiring for the CEO or the vice president of a company or a technology company, why wouldn't I? I know we all have guys at the pecking order. Okay, this guy's next in line. But why wouldn't I interview, if I have 15 candidates, interview them all? I got some time to do it. I mean, we're going through. Not hiring a coach, as I said, I think Michigan should let this rest a second before you actually make the hire. Yeah. That doesn't mean you're not searching and doing interviews and flying to the guy and interview. Of course, the energy, Gruden's popular. But you also have to fight through the temptation. There's a part of me that says my heart is saying, man, it would be great to have John back doing it. It would be awesome to see because I love everything about what, you know, just all the stuff. And he's trying to make, he hit his rock bottom when he left the Raiders. So right. He's been through that. We've seen it hit guys like Sark in the past with his. We see it going, but a lot of guys have hit it. So maybe he's learned a valuable lesson on how to handle it. And I love John. But there's a big risk here. Of all the guys you mentioned, that's the biggest risk. Not because he's not good and successful, but college is different. Gruden is still old school, even though he's Barstool and doing it. He still has that, me paying this guy to go play football? There is he out of that mentality? So, yeah, I want to go. I probe and find out. Of course I would. It's John Gruden. He's had great success, broadcasting, coaching, and he'd come back with fire in his belly. And I think he would take this job extremely serious. But you also have to take into consideration, would this be a stop John wants to stay at, just like you were mentioning right. for other guys? I think it would. It's Michigan. I would interview him, but I have to do a deep dive into it. I don't think that's going to happen, Segs. I think the removal from college has been a long time, although I would, as the AD or the president, say, let's just bring him in and see where John's head is. Why wouldn't you? You may discover a gem that was a gem at one point, went through his time, and come on back, but there'll be plenty that think that John's doing just great where he's at, not Michigan. I'd love to see it. I don't think you're going to.
Bryce Underwood, what should his thoughts be with this situation going on? If you were, you know, just got paid all that money from Michigan, you're from Belleville, Michigan, which is not far from Ann Arbor. Michigan gets Belleville kids all the time from that high school. In fact, he's got multiple teammates on Michigan right now from his high school teams. What would you be thinking if you're Bryce Underwood right now watching this? Are you just looking to see who the next head coach is and coming in with the offensive mindset? Who's my quarterback coach going to be? Who am I going to be working with day to day to get better, to get myself ready for the NFL in a few years?
Of course I would. And no, Bryce Underwood doesn't deserve the opportunity to go to the AD and say, hey, here's who I want. Right. He doesn't have enough skin in the game to do that. I mean, I guarantee there's some out there that will suggest it. Listen, Bryce Underwood didn't play well. His skill set is through the roof.
Yes.
His skill set is through the roof. I thought he was underutilized the right way. I don't think they coached it right and called plays right off it. I just don't. I think it could have. I would have used his skills different and maximized his legs as much as his arm. I think they held that back. And when they needed him, I think that you put more pressure on a kid because he hasn't seen it enough. Now, with that, I don't need him to comment on this. If I'm a University of Michigan, I know it's the portal and everybody comments. I don't need, I'm looking at the situation. Of course you're looking at the situation. To me, right. It just says, are you all in? And I already know this. He's easy to talk out of a situation. He's proven that. When it comes to dollar signs, LSU had him dead to rights. $12 million got him to Michigan. No former player, no legacy. His pops didn't play there. No member of his family. The guy went to Michigan because the money was bigger and he got talked out of his commitment to LSU at the last minute. So I know, listen, are you asking me if somebody offered him $1 million more, would he go play at UCLA? Man, I'm not comparing him to the Nico situation. Do I think that it's real with a coaching leaving that he could go? Yeah, I absolutely do, because he's already proven that he can be talked out of a commitment. Now, would it be great to You're talking, if I'm coaching, I would love to coach the kid because I'm starting off with a superstar. Now we could just polish up the mechanics and get going. I just don't like him to comment on this because if I'm Michigan I want to know he's all in. Right. Even if he's not, then make the decision in private. Do it in silence. Once it's done, if you say, I don't like it, say, you know what? This doesn't match up with my skill set. I'm going to go where, you know, where so-and-so goes. I'm going to Lane Kiffin. Whatever it is, fine. I just don't think why he has to comment on it. Bryce Underwood needs to spend more time working on his game right now than talking about it. Because right now, there are going to be some say enormous talent underachieved. Now, I think part of the offense was part of that as well.
Yeah.
Because I think, like I said, I think I could take him to being a dominant, not me, but Michigan. I mean, maybe me too. He's that talented. Yeah. Just get out of his way and coach him right. I think that, yeah, and if you're the coach, you're, one of your number one things is to make sure 19 wants to be a part of it. No doubt. I just don't understand why he needs to be discussing this. We know that you're going to be considering. And what this does is open up a can of worms for me and other players to say, he wasn't committed to LSU, obviously. He could be bought by Michigan. Can he be bought by LSU to go back home?
Right.
If you're LSU, why wouldn't you do this? Well, why wouldn't you jump in on him? He already wanted to go there. And now you got a coach who's going to maximize you. I can already tell you that. Charlie and Lane. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you reconnect? And if you're LSU, you tell me you're not hanging in the weeds waiting to pounce. I would. And especially when I see this, which tells me he's not all in. It's not Michigan. He's not doing it for that M right there. He's doing it for who the coaches that can elevate his game. And I get it. But, nah, if you're Michigan, I wouldn't get too comfortable right now thinking Bryce Underwood's all in,
yeah,
judging from the decisions he's made in the past. Yeah, and I damn well want to keep him there if I'm Michigan, Sags.
And that's why it'll be interesting to see how this timeline works when it comes to this new head coach, because you have the, you know, any of the kids on your roster right now can transfer anytime they want. We've had a couple recruits ask for their letters of release out of their letter of intent from the University of Michigan. Now, we'll see if that continues or if kids are waiting to see, because I think it's a month after a coach is fired that you have a month, I think, to get out if you want.
And the kids should be able to leave, say, when a coach
is
moving on.
100%.
Because that's why most of them go there. See, that's part of the collateral damage, Segs. The collateral damage from the Sharon Moore stuff is going to – it's going to affect it all the way down to the equipment room, man.
Yes.
It's just us.
We will find out the Heisman Trophy winner this weekend, tomorrow night. Let me run through your top 10, and then I'll give you the four finalists. So who finished at 10? Haynes King, quarterback, Georgia Tech. Number 9, Caleb Downs, safety from Ohio State.
Maybe the best football player all around, and one of them in America. Great,
yes,
player.
Yes, definitely one of them. Number 8, Trinidad Chambliss, Lane Kiffin's quarterback at Ole Miss. Number 7, Gunnar Stockton, who had a just kind of last 60% of the season he took off as a quarterback for Georgia. He finishes 7th. Number
Big
6.
Big reason why Georgia has got to be one of the favorites to win the whole thing.
100% for sure. Number 6, Jeremiah Smith, the best all-around football player in college football, I think, is number 4 for Ohio State, Jeremiah Smith.
He's going to make an NFL team pretty happy when that time comes, Sage.
And then number 5, just outside of the finalist group, Jacob Rodriguez, the linebacker from Texas Tech.
Hard for me not to have him in New York City. I think that he's one of my favorite players in college football.
Yes.
And he is a beast. This is a guy that walks onto an NFL when he gets to the NFL, Sage. Look at the difference he's made on that Texas Tech team.
Oh, yeah.
When he shows up on Sundays, a guy who, like, in year 2 is named team captain. That's who that is right there. Right. Love him. Love him.
And
if we gave defensive players the respect they deserve, he'd probably be in New York City.
Yes, and then you heard their coach talking multiple times for multiple games. They had him in on offense. He threw a touchdown at one point. And then he was even intercepted at one point, and then he ran for a touchdown. He's caught touchdowns, so he's kind of done it all. They're trying to get that Heisman candidacy more legit, because I think it takes a team like Texas Tech and makes them even more known as they keep spending more and more in NIL, trying to get their team even better than the 4th ranking that they have coming into the college football playoff, getting a bye. Then we have your favorites, or your finalists, excuse me. Julian Sayin, quarterback, Ohio State. Diego Pavia, quarterback, Vanderbilt. Fernando Mendoza, quarterback, Indiana. And Jeremiah Love, the running back from Notre Dame. So if you had to pick right now, those four, which order do you put them in?
Okay, and Segs, here's the crazy thing, is whether there's criteria or there's a protocol, like here's the things you judge the Heisman on. Some people are going to judge it otherwise.
Yes.
One of them for me is, and I don't even know if it's in, it probably is. I don't have a Heisman vote. Wish I did. Is it the impact that, and take his age, whatever you want. And I get that that's going to work against him. It just is, Segs. You and I both know more than likely. But his impact at Vanderbilt, what he's done for that university, that's a Heisman Trophy winner alone. And he's been productive. I don't think he's going to win it. I think he's going to finish second. Love is going to finish third. Sain is going to finish fourth.
Okay.
And Fernando Mendoza is going to win the Heisman Trophy. And should. If I was voting, Mendoza would be the first pick. Love's a beast and a great football player. And you say, well, Sain, number one, or well, what, the number two team in the country, Six, is that Ohio State right now, right? Yeah. Number two, Sain, what grade's Sain in?
Sophomore, I believe.
And freshman win the Heisman, redshirt, I get it. So that's not my – the point is that has he done enough to bypass Pavia, considering the impact of the university on the reigning national champion? He's had a great – listen, if I'm not mistaken, he's a kid like a Rancho Bernardo, that area, like San Diego kid. He's from my neck of the woods, not far. So like in the – like Mount Carmel, in that area, say Rancho Bernardo, North County, San Diego, I think. And I heard people talking about him – that my buddies that cover high school football, I'm pretty sure. So,
he went to Carlsbad High School.
There you go. Okay, right on the beat. Carlsbad is the North County where Glenn Kozlowski, who played at BYU years ago with McMahon, that Carlsbad would be about 15 miles. Well, it's right on the coast.
Okay.
My school would be about 15 to 18 miles inland from Carlsbad. So it's near Del Mar and Carlsbad and that area, say. So a lot of good players and a lot of good football being played down there. So, and a buddy of mine who went to my high school, watches high school football, covers it all the time, has mentioned his name when he was in high school. So, but you're not winning the Heisman for high school. So I've known and followed his career. I think he's a really good player, but I can tell you this, he's going to get another chance. I think he finishes third or fourth, but Love's been a great impact. I think the second one is, finishing in second will be Pavia because there's a groundswell for him. Mendoza's been the best player at the position all year long in big moments. I go Mendoza, Pavia, Love, and Sain in that order.
Yeah, I would have it almost the same. I'd switch Sain and Love, just those three, four guys, switching them. But I think Mendoza and Pavia are your one and two, and then Sain and Love finishing third and fourth in whichever way you want it. I think those – the first two, I think, are set. I think we're right on those. With
and then you made then Segs. It's such a quarterback award now.
Yes,
a lot of times that in Love may end up fourth, but the first two I think are pretty well set. The question is, will Pavia be able to overtake Mendoza this late? We'll see. Votes are all in, so we'll see.
Getting to that number one ranking for Indiana, I think, is just going to pull too much weight.
Best player, Ohio best State. Team, right?
Segs? Yeah, I mean, it's just. If it was Ohio State that he was playing for and just filled with all these great players like Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate and Brandon Innes and Max Clair, all these first, second round picks, then Pavia, I think, sneaks in there. But the fact that it's Indiana, it's, what they've done there in his time.
Don't you think it hurts saying those things?
Yes, that's what
I'm saying.
Because
of all the great players around him,
If Mendoza was there at Ohio State, I think Pavia wins. But the fact that he plays for Indiana and with Cignetti turning the program around like he did, I think it's got to be.
Think about Mendoza's year. 1 year starter. The signature moment against Penn State, moments drive. Number one team in the country. You beat Ohio State in the Big Ten championship. You got to buy, and you're going to be the first pick of the draft or the first quarterback taken high, depending on who needs what. That's a hell of a 12-month run for him, or less now. It's been less. It's 6 months, really.
Yeah.
It's been about 6-7 months. So good on him, man. I love to see it.
Don't do the 6-7 thing. Like, I know you didn't mean to. And you,
six,
like,
four, seven,
I,
yeah,
now
yeah.
I just hear it, and it's, I'm so conditioned to it with my goddamn kids. Like, it, oh.
I should have said 6 to 8 months.
Six to 8 months.
The fact that you just say, yeah.
There is no 6-7.
The fact that I got to think about that shit drives me nuts.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It's just, as soon as you said it, it just went in my head. I'm like, I wanted to slam my hand on the table, but I didn't want to send everything.
I don't blame you, brother.
Off my desk. All right. Six pack of picks, as we do every single Friday. We got five NFL games. One.
We take the over last night? We took the over,
yes,
didn't we?
Yes, we did. We both had Tampa, but we both took the over. Which hit? So
I did not bet the game, but I would have. Yeah, so we would have bet the over.
Okay. Was not touching that game last night. All right, start with the Bills at New England. The Bills are a 1.5 point road favorite over the number one seed New England Patriots.
Patriots beat them once, tough to beat them twice. Josh Allen playing at a high level. I think this is a field goal game, but I'm going with the Bills on the road. Beat them in their building. As much as I love New England, give me Buffalo.
I'm taking the Patriots. I think that 49.5, I would take the under. I think we're looking at like a 24-20 type game somewhere along the lines. But give me New England and give me the 1.5. I'll take the points just because it's very little. Chargers at Chiefs. Chiefs -5.5. We've seen what they've been doing lately. They are at home. That feels like a big number against the Chargers, who've been playing good football, but only a 41.5. Point total. What you like here?
Yeah, to me this seems like a lot of points. I know the respect for Kansas City on their late season year after year, but this ain't last year and it's not 3 years ago. I don't think the Chiefs are good enough to beat the Chargers by 5.5 points right now, the way they're playing.
Right.
They obviously do. I'm taking the Chargers to get inside the number. You're giving me those points, I'll take them. I think the under, I think that that may be in play as well. I like the way the Chargers gutted it out this past week. I don't like the Chiefs where they are right now. You give me, and all the talk may get them playing. I'm going to go with the my hometown. I'm going, well, when they were the San Diego Chargers, I'm going with Chargers, and you give me those points. That's too much. If it was 5 or 4.5, maybe, but the hook says Chargers for me.
Yeah, I got the Chargers, and I'm taking the over.
I think the Chargers are a better team anyway, Sags.
Yes, I do too.
I do.
I do too. Even with all the injuries that the Chargers have, I still think they're a better football team. All right, the Colts with Phillip Rivers trying to play quarterback possibly this Sunday. We don't know if he will, but they are going out to Seattle to face Mike McDonald's defense, which is flying around. The Seahawks are a 13.5 point favorite. That tells you how much losing Daniel Jones hurt the Indianapolis Colts, and the over under is just 42.5 on a 13.5 spread. Who you like in this one?
And the Seahawks bring it, dude, defensively. They're well coached. That Darnold has had a good year. This line is huge, and exactly why I'm taking the Seahawks at home. Hard building to play in. Not enough time for either Rivers or Riley Leonard, I don't think. Even though then I understand, you know, the injury when it happened to Daniel Jones. I think this is a one-sided game, and it's weird. We're saying a one-sided game about a team that was the best team in the AFC a month ago. Seahawks. Yeah. Aside from the Rams, the Seahawks, excuse me, may very well be the best team in the NFC. I think this is a blowout, and I'm going to ride with what Vegas is saying. Give me the Seahawks.
Yeah, I'm taking Seahawks in the under. I like the under in this game. Packers -2.5 on the road at the Denver Broncos, another top team in the AFC, a home dog. So who you like in this game?
I like the under at 42.5, but both defenses pretty stout. Broncos are really good defense. There's going to be a lot of pressure getting after the quarterback. I don't think I'd touch this because you're talking about going into Denver, and the Packers are 2.5 point favorites. A road favorite in Denver in December seems odd. To me, the safer bet is the Broncos, and the Packers are playing really good football. I like the under in the game, Segs, so give me that one. And I think that I almost feel like I could take the Broncos at home in this and come away with a money line win, but I'm going 42.5. Respect for both teams. Both will be dangerous in the postseason. quarterback play will, you know, and do you trust Bo Nix right now? I do trust their defense. Give me the under on both sides. I like the under in the game.
Yeah, I think if I was going to bet this game, I'd probably take Broncos money line just because it's in Denver in December. Everything you said, and it just feels like Denver loves to pressure the quarterback, and I feel like, you know, you can force Love into some throws that, you know, now if you give him time like the Bears did, he'll pick you apart with deep explosive plays. But Denver doesn't do what the Bears do. They're the exact opposite. They get after the quarterback better than anyone in football as a unit.
You let Jordan Love set his feet, he's going to just he'll yes. throw 350 on your asshole. He's a good player.
Yeah, if I was going to touch, I would say Denver money line just because they're at home and playing in December, and they're playing damn good football on the defensive side of the
this
ball.
Feels like this feels like a snowy fist fight, Segs.
Like a 17-16. Like
20-16, yeah, just a, right, no question. Both teams kick three field goals, and you get one touchdown type of thing. Yeah, and agreed.
To be honest, who doesn't turn the ball over, or who turns the ball over less? I mean, is it Bo Nix or Jordan Love? I don't know how much you can really trust either of them when they're being pressured. So that's also another reason I'd probably just stay away from this game. But if I had to choose, I'd take Denver. All right, Lions at Rams, a very good game this weekend. Rams a 6-point favorite. Now, all the other games, low 40s besides that Buffalo-New England, a 54.5, and offense is going to be massive in this game.
37-33. Yep. Give me the over. Yeah, give me the over. I really don't know, Segs, Lions-wise, what we're going to see on fourth down. I really don't. I'm sitting here like, well, what am I going to see from these guys? I do know this. They can get in the end zone. Both teams can. Both quarterbacks know how to play at a high level. Obviously, even though it's been a minute, Jared Goff still has, you know, I'm sure some feelings about the Rams situation. Everybody carries that when a team quit on you. The Rams don't care. They won a Super Bowl. Both offenses explosive. Give me the over on this game. I think this game is in the 60s and possibly pushing the 70s.
Yeah, I'm with you on the over, too. I would take the Rams. I just, right now, I'm more confident in Sean McVay than I am Dan Campbell. And I feel like he's pushing all the right buttons besides that one game where Stafford struggled. Other than that, Stafford's been the best quarterback in the league, kind of by a full tier by himself. So I would say, agreed. Give me that. And then one of the best games we get every single year just because of the atmosphere. Army-Navy, 6.5 for Navy. They are the favorite, a 38.5 over-under, which, you know, there's not a lot of points in this game because they're doing that wing T, triple option, all that crazy stuff.
The game rolls fast, too, because they run the football
quick. So 38.5. I like Navy minus the points. They're playing good football right now. And give me the under.
Navy's obviously the choice, but I'll never choose Navy against Army. My dad's 82nd Airborne Army. Yeah. I always choose them, even if they're 35-point dogs, dude. I'll take in my feels respect for this game. I have not been to this game in person.
I know it's,
but to me, the tradition of it, I know it's not exciting football, but the coaches, just everything, what they represent, while it's an important game, these cats may a year from now be fighting some war somewhere. Right. So let's hope not, but I respect for this game. It's, you have to see it. Give me Army at minus. I'd probably be better just say give me Army and take the under, but you know what? I'm always taking Army. So you'll ask me this next year, take an Army. I miss my pops. Even though my dad didn't play there, he was 82nd Airborne in the Army. So I'm going with that. And much respect to this game. The truth is, no matter what happens, I feel like I'm the guy that stands up in my living room when they celebrate at the end, just out of respect. I love it. And it's, to me, I love that it's a standalone game as well. Go Army, beat Navy.
All right. We'll see who wins that one in our main college football game this weekend. College football playoffs kickoff next weekend. So when we come back Monday, we're going to talk a lot of NFL. We're going to break it down. Maybe we have a Michigan head coach. We got a lot of stuff to get through. But the NFL playoffs are going to be front and center because teams are fighting for those final spots. Seeding still can be moved so much, as we saw last week. Bears win or Bears lose, they go from first to seventh. Now, if the Packers go and lose in Denver and the Bears win against Cleveland, they're back up in the top three of the NFC. Yeah. So the seeding is still not set, nearly set. So we got a lot to look forward to come Monday. But enjoy your weekends. It's going to be
fun. You too, brother.
It's going to be freezing here.
Good luck to those Heisman guys. You stay warm. And it was a great week. And to our listeners and our followers and all the people who are part of this, we appreciate you. Like, subscribe, tell all your friends. We're eternally grateful for it. I mean that sincerely. There's a lot of crap that goes on in the world, but for an hour and 15 minutes a day, we get to have a blast with you guys. So thank you.
Yes, for sure.
We don't take it lightly.
Like he said, please like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Get notifications of when we go live every single day, Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. We'll be back Monday with Coach JB, who will be fired up as always, and you never know what he
does. I'll guarantee JB has something to say about the Todd Bowles thing, even though he said it on his show, yes. On our show. Guaranteed, because I have a hunch whose side he's on this too. The coach.
I love yesterday, JB, you know, he goes off early in the show, talk about Joe Burrow, calls him nades, drops the F, and then later on he's like, well, I don't want to cuss on your show. It's like, you just done it 918 times in the first 3 minutes.
And
I was dying.
I thought the same thing. Well, I don't really want to cuss. Well, that dumb mother. So I think that his soul child yesterday, his dog was.
Yeah.
He kind of, I imagine he was simpatico with our guy, Todd Bowles, last night. Post game. So I freaking love it. I don't want to cuss, but let me. That's my thing. I don't want to disrespect. You know, when people say, no disrespect. I didn't say it as disrespect, but I'm saying, I don't want to cuss, but let me unleash the F-bomb. So he's the best, man. So. I love it. We'll see you on
Coach
Monday.
JB will join us Monday. We'll talk to everybody Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.